Good afternoon, everyone. It is a pleasure to see all of you here this afternoon. Grateful for the opportunity to speak. Grateful for the lessons that I've heard. They've all been absolutely wonderful. Singing has been marvelous. Food has been certainly that which we have truly enjoyed, and we look forward to another meal here in just a little while. I'm grateful for the effort that has been put forth, as others have expressed. I'm grateful to Brother Cody and all the work that he has put forth in bringing this event to us. Also grateful for the eldership here at Southwest for the efforts they put in leading the congregation and overseeing it here. And I want to thank you for being here this afternoon. Overcoming laziness. We're going to start with a series of up-downs. Are you ready? Stand up, sit down. Stand up, sit down. That's what I started to have us do. But then as I mentioned that, someone said, well, you might want to rethink that because there might be some fallout from that event. So we won't do that. Nor will I do what I was mentioned to me. It was mentioned, I won't call any names, second-year student at the Brown Trail School of Preaching. His name is Caleb. But he said I ought to just sit down on the front pew and just say, well, we're going to overcome laziness. I was going to stand to speak, but I'm being lazy today. So I'm just going to sit here and do my lesson. But I didn't know if that would go very well either. So what we're going to talk about is overcoming laziness. The assignment as I was given was to address this from the aspect of the work ethic that we as Christians ought to have in light of society's view of entitlement. Now, everything I say this afternoon needs to be interpreted in light of this. If a man or woman is incapable of working, then they are not under the obligation to work. Now, what did I say? If you are physically in some way incapable of working, what I'm saying does not apply to you. God has made provisions for folks when they struggle, when they enter into these aspects of life. What I'm talking about this afternoon has to do with those who are able but are unwilling to work. And in that instance, God has addressed them. If a man will not work, neither shall he what? Eat. Now, it doesn't say they're unable to work. It says they are not what? Willing. That goes to what? The mind. The attitude. I'm not going to work. Folks, I've been in the same town, small town in East Texas for nearly 35 years. And I could drive you because I did this for 20 plus years as a bus driver in that school district. And I can drive you by houses of people that are welfare recipients and have been in that situation for 30 plus years. And they have no intention of what? Their job is what? Waiting for the government to supply them with their monthly check. There are those who are going to get an education, a college education, and they're expecting when that is done for someone else to what? Pay that bill. Folks, I would have liked to have pursued more education myself, but the reality is I couldn't afford it. I couldn't afford it. Now, I did not expect someone else to pay for my educational pursuits. So what I'm talking about this afternoon is overcoming laziness and unwillingness to work. When I think about my childhood, this memory comes to me vividly. My daddy always had two jobs. Always. My daddy was in the military. Sadly, our military men and women are not paid near what they're due. But that's a side point. My daddy worked. He was in the Air Force. In all of my growing up years, he had a second job. There were five of us kids. Mom was there. Mom was a stay-at-home mother, so we had one income. Dad would come in. He'd change out of his military uniform. He'd put on his Williams Steakhouse shirt. And he would go to the Williams Steakhouse on Jacksboro Highway, just between Fort Worth, Texas, and Lake Worth, Texas. You know what we never ate as a family? Steak. My daddy was a cook. My daddy, all of his life, never ever once fixed me a steak. Why? Couldn't afford it. When daddy left the steakhouse, he went to work at a convenience store. He was a night cashier. Took care of the store. During the summertime, he would take me with him. I had a top. Some of you kids in here have never had fun with a top. You don't even know what I'm talking about. You would have a strip of string, and you'd have a little spherical deal, and it had a pin on the bottom, and you'd wrap that string around that top, and we'd throw that thing, and we'd line the Coke boxes up. Something else y'all have never experienced, a wooden Coke box. We would stack them up. Dr. Pepper's, Coca-Cola, Pepsi, RC, always had a RC in a moon pie. But we'd be in that room, my brother and I, and we'd take those tops and we'd throw them and we'd bounce them off those Coke boxes, those crates, and we had the biggest time. But Daddy was inside tending to the customers. Two jobs his whole life. I didn't know how successful my dad was till he died. Because when he died, it took 5 years for my older sister to divvy out his Kroger stock. He had invested. So, what about laziness? How do we overcome that? If you would, go to Proverbs 6. We'll spend a little time in this, and then I want to move on to something else. But I want to mention this because it's what I prepared and what's in the book. But Proverbs 6. There in Proverbs chapter 6, we are encouraged by the Proverbs writer to go to the ant. Now somebody ask me or answer this for me, and this is a workshop still, right? Somebody answer, which ant? Go to the ant. Which one? Folks, do you have any idea how many ants there are in the world? Apparently somebody counted them. I did a little internet research. And internet research, you can take it for what it is. But for every human being on the face of the earth, there are 2.5 million ants. So which one are you going to? When I was growing up, red ants were the thing. Now it's fire ants. I don't know how anybody could say this is the exact number of how many ants there are for every human being on the face of the earth. But if you just think about it, how many billion people are there? 8 billion? Almost. 7 point something. For easy math, now you times 2.5 million times 8 million, and you'll come up with how many ants there are in the world. But what do the ants teach us? Go to the ant, you sluggard. What do we learn from ants? As we turn our attention to what's in the book, I want to briefly mention some definitions. When we think about definitions, what does it mean to be lazy? I don't consider myself lazy, do you? But I can point to some individuals, and in comparison, I'm lazy. One of our elders at the congregation in Fruitvale, up until the last 4 or 5 years, he would run day upon day upon day of no sleep. He never rested until he started having so many health concerns due to the fact that he had abused himself in that manner for all those years that he finally had to start slowing down. But even in his slow stage, if you were to compare he and I'm the lazy one. What does it mean to be lazy? Well, by definition, it means someone who is resistant to work. Someone who is disposed to idleness. Slow moving. Folks, I'm slower moving now than what I used to be. That's a natural part of aging. But still, these definitions are applicable, but we have to understand that there are ways of comparing and using them. Notice if someone who is lazy or laziness is depicted as one who's lying on its side or reclining or the lazy part of a cattle brand. Lazy. What does it mean to be entitled? Entitled. You might just notice the last definition under this word, explanation. It says, a government program that guarantees and provides benefits to a particular group. We have a host of society that is entitled to whatever they feel they're entitled to. Now, what's it mean to be a sluggard? When you look at Proverbs 6, he says, go to the ant, you sluggard. What do we mean? I'm pretty sure if you were to go up to somebody and say, man, you're a sluggard, they'd probably think, I don't play baseball. I'm not a slugger. What's a sluggard? It's someone who's slothful. It's someone who is an idler. I used to have a saying, or my daddy used to have a saying, and he'd say, boy, why are you standing there twiddling your thumbs? Why are you doing that? When we think about someone who's a sluggard, it's someone who's slothful. Well, what does slothful mean? These are words we don't use nowadays. What does it mean to be slothful? To be slothful means to be disinclined. What's it mean to be disinclined? Okay, I'm not inclined, notice now, to work. I'm not inclined to work. That means what? I'm apathetic toward work. I'm not going to put out a whole lot of effort in that area. I'm slothful. I'm a sluggard. I'm just sort of disinclined. Now, this is what we want to think about, because we're encouraged by the Proverbs writer to move in that direction and consider the ant. What does the ant do? Look at Proverbs 6. We'll make just a few notes on this, then we're going to move on to some other things I think that are applicable. But notice in Proverbs 6 and verse 6, "Go to the ant, you sluggard, and consider her ways." Now, I've never been one to just go and pull my lawn chair up beside an anthill and watch the ants. And that might be my shortcoming. Because what does the ant do? Let's continue. "The ant, which has no captain, has no overseer, has no ruler." The ant has no one doing what? Giving orders. "And yet the ant gathers her food in the harvest and provides her supplies in the summer." The ant does their work in the opportune time, making what? Preparation. Now the ant, when you continue to look at the description and what the Proverbs writer tells us, in verse number 9 it says, "How long will you slumber, O sluggard? When will you rise from your sleep?" A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to sleep. "So shall your poverty come on you like a prowler, and your need like an armed man." What do we learn from the ant? What do we learn that will help us to overcome laziness? Well, number one, we learn industry. You'll notice it there in the book. Industry. The ants are those who are industrious. They're not waiting, they're industrious. But not only that, they're cooperative. One of the things about ants that I've read, and I hate to say this, but you know, whenever I'm got this assignment in my mind, went to Proverbs chapter 6, and I began to read that passage. Then I realized I don't know near enough about ants to really appreciate what the Proverbs writer is saying. Ants are those who are industrious, but ants are also cooperative. They're those who, if the one can't get the job done, then they're going to recruit help. But they don't recruit more help than what they need. They get enough help, get the job done, and then they're through. Do you know how much strength an ant has? You know what would be the equivalent of human strength if we were to apply that to the ants? If you have a 9-year-old child, and your 9-year-old child could go out here in the parking lot and pick up one of our automobiles, you would have the equivalent strength of an ant. That's how strong the ants are. And yet they are working together cooperatively to get the work done. And ants are never idle. Never idle. And then they are making provisions for their families and for their needs, so that when the time comes for them to need to utilize those provisions, they are in what? Place. Now, what can we learn from ants? I need to learn if the job's too big for me, I need to recruit help to get the job done. From the ants, I need to understand I need cooperation and I need to accept cooperation. From the ants, I learn I need to make provision and I need to make provision now. Because when the need arises, it's too what? Late. Too late. As I said, my daddy always worked two jobs. I cannot remember a time when he didn't work two jobs. I made the statement that we never ate steak. My dad never cooked me a steak, ever. But we were never without, because daddy was always working. He never said, well, let's go down here and we'll see if we can get somebody to give us this. No. We may not have had it. And if we didn't have it, he couldn't buy it, then we didn't what? We didn't need it. We never drove an air-conditioned car till I was in high school. I graduated high school in 1977. My wife and I dated for 2 years after I graduated before we married. You know when we went in an air-conditioned automobile? When she drove. When we think about provisions and we think about working, we have to live within what? The means that we have. Now, the ants tell us great things about activity and industry and working. But go with me now to 2 Thessalonians chapter 3, because we're going to look at verses 6 through 15 in the time that we have remaining. And I will briefly make comments on this section. And I will preface this once again by stating, everything that we discuss, everything that we talk about, everything that we say is applicable to those who are what? Able, but not what? Willing. Now, 2 Thessalonians 3:6. 3:6, 3:10, 3:12. There's a common word that appears in every one of these verses. How are we going to overcome laziness? Number one, God commands us to. Look at verse 6 with me. Now we command you, brethren, in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ, that you withdraw from every brother who walks disorderly and not according to the tradition which he received from us. Verse 10. For even when we were with you, we commanded you this. If anyone will not work, neither let him eat. Verse 12. Now those who are such, we command and exhort by our Lord Jesus Christ that with quietness... they work and eat their own bread. Three times in this section, Paul gives commands to the church at Thessalonica. And it regards the activities that people are involved in and engaged in. If you look at verse number 6, the word withdraw means to keep away from. It means to avoid. To be disorderly is a word that describes freeloading or sponging. It is a word that conveys you're out of step. You are out of rank. It is a military term. All of my formative years, I was raised on military bases. And I would see and I would understand the rank And I would see those who were passing on the sidewalks, and you'd see men, and they'd put their hand up and salute. And so I can remember as a younger boy, I'd ask Daddy, I'd say, what's that man doing? And he said, he's saluting his superior officer. What happened if he failed to salute? He was what? Out of rank. Walking disorderly. Now notice he says this is the type of individual in Thessalonica that the church is to withdraw from. Who are to? They are to refrain from association with. They are to be those people that are identified. And it is because they are not keeping the tradition. Now 2 Thessalonians 2:15 would identify for us the traditions. These were the things that were spoken or the things they received that were written. We're not talking about just traditions of men. We're talking about those things that are written. We're talking about the law of God. Now notice verse 10. Verse 10 again. Now he says concerning those, for even when we were with you, we commanded you. Folks, you don't have to go very far in the book of Thessalonians. Go back to 1 Thessalonians. You go back to 1 Thessalonians chapter 2 and verse 9. You go to 1 Thessalonians chapter 5 and verse 14. This is a refrain that comes up throughout the book and through the church at Thessalonica when he says, you need to be what? Working. Why was this such an issue in the church at Thessalonica? Probably their misconception of the Lord's second coming. The Lord's second coming, they thought it was imminent. So therefore, perhaps they quit their jobs and were no longer working, and they were just going to spend the rest of their time waiting and allowing the brethren to continue to help them as they were awaiting the Lord's second coming. Paul says, we addressed this when we were with you. We addressed this in letter as I wrote it to you. And he says, these are the things that you're failing to keep. Now notice he says that you're not keeping the traditions. And in verse number 10, when we were with you, we commanded you, if anyone will not work, neither shall he eat. If I know one thing about members of the Church of Christ, we like to eat. We do. But every bit of food that we've eaten and the food that we will eat has been supplied by someone. It didn't magically appear. Preparation has been made. And as we think about the idea of working and the injunction, the command that Paul puts upon them in verse number 10 when he says, if you're not going to work, you're not going to eat. It's the same thing you find in 1 Timothy chapter 5 when he's talking about the fact that if a man will not take care of his own, he is worse than an unbeliever. The same thought is conveyed. So now when we look at verse number 12, notice as well that we are to eat our own bread. This is a figure of speech referring to one making their own living. Making your own living. Supporting yourself instead of depending upon others to do so. Now, how are they to do it? They are to do it in quietness. Possibly in contrast to the busybodies that we'll notice in verse number 11. Because 6, 10, and 12, Paul commands the church in Thessalonica, I'm commanding you to do this. If you have those that are continuing to walk disorderly, out of step in this regard, then mark them. Refrain yourself from them. Let them know that this is not behavior that is acceptable. Number two, if they're not going to work, don't let them eat. Number three, in verse number 12, he identifies the fact that you are to command and exhort by our Lord Jesus that they work. That they work and eat your own bread. Make your own living. And he did this by what? Command. Notice, if I'm going to overcome laziness, I must understand the Lord commands me to do so. But secondly, notice the example. Paul says, notice me. 1 Corinthians 9, we don't have time to go through all of that context where Paul is talking about the rights he had as a preacher and a teacher of the gospel. And the point is, if a man is going to preach the gospel, he has the right to expect to be what? Compensated for that work. But Paul forego that. He did not accept that always. The church at Thessalonica is one of those places that he didn't. Why? Look with me, if you will, verse number 7. For you yourselves know how you ought to follow us, for we were not disorderly among you. We weren't out of rank. We weren't out of step. And you know that. Verse 8, nor did we eat anyone's bread free of charge. Does that mean Paul never accepted a free meal? No. Paul accepted monetary support. The church of Philippi helped him more than once. Paul accepted money. But for the church at Philippi, he says, we did not. But what did we do? We worked with labor and toil. How might we say that in an East Texas vernacular? Paul worked his fingers to the bone, so to speak, with hard labor and toil. What was his job? He was a tent maker. Read Acts 18, verse 3. He was a tent maker, and he says, I've set you an example that you work and you labor hard. Why? Why did Paul do this? So that I might not be a burden to any one of you. Paul did not want for his receiving of money from the church at Thessalonica to place an undue burden upon the church and to cause them to what? Look down upon the preaching of the gospel. Now mark that, please. In your mind, mark that. Paul did not want to do anything to cause people to look down upon the preaching of the gospel. Keep that in mind. Notice now, if you will, verse 7, now 8, and going to 9, he says, not because we do not have authority or the right, but to make ourselves an example of how you should follow us. When we think about 1 Corinthians 11, 1, Paul says, be thou imitators of me as I imitate Christ. Did you ever stop and say, well, how did Paul work? Here he says, you follow my example in the effort in the field of labor and work. Paul worked himself tirelessly, physically, night and day. Now, not 24-hour periods, but he says, I worked in the daytime and I worked at night. But he says, I'm an example. Verse 12, or I should say now, moving to verse 11, as we talk about how can we overcome laziness, realize it's a command, don't be lazy. Number 2, look at Paul's example. Number 3 now, understand that actions have consequences. When you look at verse 11, he says, for we hear that there are some who walk among you in a disorderly manner, not working at all, but are busybodies. I particularly like this thought as one writer was talking about it. And he says, some have no business, but are busy in everybody's business. And he says, don't do that. That's what Paul says. He says, do not do that. Why, Paul? Because there are such, and we command and exhort by our Lord Jesus Christ, that with quietness they work and eat their own bread. But you, brethren, do not grow weary in doing good. You don't grow weary in doing good. Remember I told you to mark something? Paul says, I would not accept money from the church at Thessalonica because I didn't want to put an undue burden upon them and I did not want to have them to look down upon the gospel in a negative way. How does the world view us when we claim to be Christians and we are Christians and we're not what? We're not working. They view us and they see us and they see that, know that we're not people who are carrying our own weight. And he says now here, don't you grow weary. You think the church in Thessalonica, those that were working, those that were laboring, got discouraged by those who were refusing to work? Let me ask you this. In your local congregations, when a benevolence case comes in and somebody's asking for money, what's the first thing that may creep into our minds if we're not careful? They're here to take advantage of the church. Now just think, if you were Christians in Thessalonica, and you're having to support all of these folks who will not work. Not that they're not able to, but they just will not work. And they're coming to you for what? Money. Help. Support. Do you think that could become discouraging? So as we think about verse 14 and 15, we have to bring this to a balanced end. These things may take place, and they were taking place at the church in Thessalonica. But what does Paul end verse 15 with? How am I to treat them? Those that were abusing the system, if we might use that terminology, how am I to treat them? I'm going to note them, and I'm going to do all that I can to encourage them to go to work and to start carrying their own end of the load. But he says, do not count him as an enemy, but admonish him as a brother. When we think about overcoming laziness, I must realize that when it comes to laziness, that it is sadly, some people just don't know any different. They've been raised up to think that this is just how we do things, this is how we survive, and they really have no idea of what actual work and labor is. And perhaps some of you are thinking, well, okay, preacher, but you only work one day a week. Hey, if a preacher can't poke fun at himself, then hey, he might as well quit preaching. Folks, the work of a preacher is what? Working. That's the work of a preacher. Now, it may not every day be physical work. But folks, there are days I would trade the mental aspect of preaching for digging a ditch any day of the week. I've done both. But we must be working. We must be working in the church. We must be working to provide for our own families. We must be providing so that we will present a good influence and a good reputation to the community around us. And laziness is that which God forbids. Read John 5:17. God worked, Jesus worked. And we are to be what? Workers. How many times have you sung the song, I want to be a worker for the Lord? I'm going to suggest to you that the meaning may go much, much deeper than what we think when we're singing the song. Let us overcome laziness and let us be diligent workers in the kingdom. Thank you.